If you need a new roof or a repair, Easton Roofing will take care of you. Estimates are always free and suggestions are built on integrity. Visit EastonRoofing.com for more information. Get back to business faster with Easton Roofing. Easton Roofing. Integrity matters.
Player, coach, pain in the ass. He's done it all on the gridiron from South Bend to Arrowhead. From football on the radio, back to football, then more radio, then a little more football, and now radio again. It's Tim Grunhard on the program.
Yes, indeed. Hour number two begins right now with Grunny. Of course, happy hour beginning right now at Twin Peaks. Don't forget the big fight coming up this Saturday night. Wilder versus Fury, one of the most anticipated fights in a long, long time. You can catch it at Twin Peaks. They'll be happy to get you set up with a great seat, right? Great seat. Check out the fight. Always the fights are on at Twin Peaks, so go see them today and every day. Basketball tonight, you want to see Mizzou, great place to watch some college basketball is Twin Peaks. Of course, eats, drinks, scenic views, that's what you get. And you can take advantage of the great happy hour prices now, great price on appetizers. Go to Twin Peaks today, and I think you're going to be quite pleased with what you get. In fact, I think it's a place where we're going to go to watch the fights this weekend. So make plans to attend at Twin Peaks, where all the fights, whether it's boxing or MMA, are always on at Twin Peaks. We welcome Tim Grunhard to the program. He joins us here in the studio as I am here in Surprise, Arizona. Tim, how are you?
That is a damn shame that you're down in Surprise. Now, listen, you do a wonderful job of covering the Royals camp down in Surprise. But of all the people that work at this station, and all the people that I know, you use the luxury of Arizona lease. You don't play golf. You don't lay in the sun. You don't swim. You don't hike. You don't do anything like that. So basically, you're down there just slugging around. You cover the Royals, and then you go back to the condo and put your feet up. Right?
First of all, it's a house.
I've never been invited, so there you go. Yep.
I
no golf.
First of all,
you're not making any tee times. You're not going to go and hike around, you know, some of the mountain ranges and some of the great nature that you could take advantage of in Arizona, especially in Surprise and in the Phoenix area. You're not going to go lay by the pool because there's no way you're going to lay by the pool. Let's tell you that right now. Yeah, you're not a swimmer. It's not like you're going to go and swim in the pool and hang out. Like,
I can swim. Thank you.
But you're not going to. Did you pack a bathing suit?
I mean, we'll see.
Did you pack a bathing suit?
No.
Well, they're not going to swim.
No.
Unless you can go in your skivvies. Please don't do that.
Gross.
That's never
stopped
me.
Please don't do that. Please don't. Is there a hot tub at the house? Can you go in the hot tub? What are you going to do? Like, explain to Kansas City. You're down there, and listen. I've been listening to you for many, many years, and I know you really don't care what I have to say about how you do your job, but I'm going to say you do an unbelievable job of covering the Royals, especially down in Surprise, but you literally do nothing else down there because you don't take advantage of the great opportunities that you have in Arizona. I think it's a damn shame.
Well, Tim, I think you're getting, kind of your own answer there. You can either come out here and take advantage of Arizona, or you can come out here and do your job well. Right, you can't do both, and I think that might explain also why you've never been invited out here.
Well, hold on,
because you would
now
come out here and take advantage of Arizona, and not do the job well.
You know, my brother played in the minor leagues and was many times down in Arizona, and he found time to go and play baseball. And
so
found
we'll call
time
your
to
brother.
Go to, no, I'm saying there are times. You have plenty of time. The players aren't there all the time, so you have time. Don't give us that you're there 12 hours a day slaving away. Over at, in Surprise, slaving away at the facility as you do the show. You got plenty of time to prep and do your post-prep and all that kind of stuff, and also take advantage of the stuff that's down there. That's my only point. You could take it as you want.
That's not really true, but if that makes you feel better, sure. we start with the morning show at 7 a.m. local time.
All right.
And we finish with this show at 5. So that's 10 hours. When am I hiking again?
There's a time. You can find a little time to hike. You can find some time to do stuff.
All right.
A little time to hike?
Little time to hike.
Yes, sir, and it's light until 5:50. You get in that 50-minute hike.
There you go. You can go to Camelback.
Yeah.
Easy, Grunny.
Right, which only takes, an hour and an hour and 10 minutes to get there by Phoenix traffic?
I drove to Camelback the one time I was there. That's not across the street. That's an hour each way.
I feel better as being a part of this great radio station that you are slaving away down in Surprise. I didn't know that. I take it all back.
You put a lot of time and effort into this plan you've concocted of how I somehow am squandering my time down here. It's going swimmingly so far, Tim.
Last year, didn't you? You were like a beekeeper or something. Didn't you have the bees were chasing you around or something? A big swarm of bees.
Yeah, and it was like cold and everything else. Yeah, but this year weather's been good. No complaints. I got to carry Lebo all over the place. But other than that, it's been good.
Well, how does it look down there? How are the Royals?
Undefeated.
Undefeated.
A good group of guys.
Yeah.
Yeah, undefeated, yes, and undefeated. Good group of guys that I do think, expect to be better. How much better remains to be seen, but I think there is a feeling that the 100 loss seasons need to be behind them. That's one of the things I've said is I do think the 100, not that it's going to be like fire Matheny. I don't think anything Matheny can really do short of, some kind of major embarrassment, off the field. I don't think there's anything Matheny could do to get fired after 1 year because I don't think anything that would happen – majorly wrong will be considered his doings. But I do think there is a feeling that the organization is done losing 100 games, needs to be done losing 100 games, and it's time to start, moving forward. And I think that's a good thing. And I do think there are some pieces, and I think there are some guys that have gotten some time that should be better this go-round. And then, of course, there's another good young wave. But any idea that it's back to the playoffs in 20 – that's gravely mistaken. I think they're still a couple of years away.
So that crop of young pitchers that they picked up, it was like 2 or 3 years ago, they're still not quite ready. They had a guy from Florida, right? One of the kids was from Florida.
Jackson Coar.
Two of them,
yeah.
And Brady Singer.
Brady Singer.
So are they in the major
league? I think they are in the major league camp. Okay. All four of the guys are in the major league camp. Coar and Singer, Coar, I forget which came first next between Lynch and Bubik, the top four guys. They're all living in a house together, by the way, so there's a little camaraderie there amongst them. Todd Lebo getting to the bottom of what they were watching on TV last night. Apparently they viewed The Bachelor, and every one of them we talked to claimed it was the first time they'd ever seen the show.
Sure.
I find that to be pure crap. I don't think there's – anyway, that was the case, that four of them just settled on The Bachelor having never watched it before. But that was their story, and they were all – yeah, right? They were all seemingly sticking to it. So they're fun. I do think it's a good group of guys. A good group of guys doesn't mean they're going to win, and I think that's what everybody wants is for the team to win. But I think, you've got that the four pitchers, and they'll probably start, I think this year, maybe high A and double A and quickly move – to double A and triple A, and I think we could see Coar and Singer by the end of the year, and the other guys I think are probably next year, and I think you could see Khalil Lee this year, and we saw Nicky Lopez last year start to cut his teeth on the big leagues. O'Hearn is now piling up some at-bats to where I think you could expect him to maybe be part of the equation. Mondesi, it's time for him to go and become the star that they think he can be. So Soler is a finished product. Perez is a finished product. So I do think there's a lot to be optimistic about, but I don't think there's a whole lot to just absolutely depend on. Does that make sense?
It does. And I think, I'm ready for baseball to start. It's around the corner. Watching a little XFL this weekend. Didn't quite enjoy it as much as the first weekend. I'm not going to lie.
Why?
To you. I don't know. Maybe because it was new and it was something different. It was on and I was kind of jonesing for some football, but I watched a little bit of it and then flicked over to Riviera Country Club, watched the golf, and just kind of stuck with that. I don't know. I just didn't feel it. I wasn't feeling the XFL this week. Now, I've actually been talking to some people that are kind of in the know a little bit about the XFL, and you know, everybody's feeling pretty good about it. The attendance was up in stadium last weekend, which is a good sign, but the ratings were down on TV. So I don't know where that leads or what that means, or, you know, it's still early, but as we know with the American Football Alliance deal, that which lasted, what, about 4 or 5 weeks? I'm not saying the XFL is going to last four or 5 weeks. I think the XFL is going to make it through the season, and I expect them to have another season. I think there's, you know, there's some good people there that are coaching. I think there's some good people there that are in the ownership spots. And I think the NFL, it kind of has given a little bit of their blessing, as much as the NFL will ever give a blessing to another football league. But it'll be interesting to see how the attendance and how the rating, everything continues as baseball starts to creep into everybody's mindset.
I do. You know, I thought it was interesting that the St. Louis Battlehawks outdrew the St. Louis Blues head-to-head this weekend.
That's because Jonathan Hayes is a coach and Jay Hayes is the assistant coach. Both are great Kansas City, well, not Kansas City guys, but lived here in Kansas City. And Jonathan obviously played here in Kansas City with me and is a great guy. So they're all there to see the Hayes brothers coach. So that's a positive.
That is a positive. I would say this. I think that one of the things that has to happen, I think they've got the network contracts. And, you know, I do think there's a level of, like, how many college basketball games can we show? Mm-hmm. And, you know, this time of year, that's what you get is wall-to-wall college basketball. And I don't know that it can carry the day. I don't think the XFL is going to get massive ratings, but I think it can get college basketball ratings. And because there's only so many times the big boys face the big boys in college basketball, right? You don't get the bottom feeder against KU or Kentucky. I mean, that's not moving the needle on what's going on. So I don't think that's there. So I think there is a spot. 10 weeks, right, plus 2 weeks of playoffs, so it's 12 weeks total. I think the XFL has a niche, all going from when the Super Bowl ends to when the draft happens.
Right.
So to me, it does fill a niche in and around the combine and pro days, which are what we get at this time of year to watch football-wise. I think it can fill a niche. It's a work in progress. There's some things to really like. I would like to see them get more, you know, quarterback views. It's one of the things that I think if they could hang the camera behind the quarterback and see more of those, the Madden view, as I call it, I think that would be great. I think they all need to be in soccer stadiums. Playing in cavernous, empty buildings just gives you an idea that this is not a big deal. Playing in a fairly full soccer stadium or even half-full soccer stadium gives a better atmosphere. The LA atmosphere was better than seeing an entire empty upper deck.
I agree.
It centralizes the noise that you hear. I mean, it wasn't just visually, but the sound is much different.
So the New York team is in the big stadium. The St. Louis team is obviously in the big stadium. Washington is in a soccer stadium, right? LA, is there an LA team?
Washington, LA.
They are in soccer stadiums, right?
Yeah. And those are the only two that, to me, that really fit. And then one of them's in the Dallas one's in the Rangers old ballpark. Mm-hmm. I don't think that works. So I think they need to get into these soccer stadiums. And I think every market has got enough things that they can use. The soccer stadiums for, number one, I think the MLS is going to expand upwards towards, you know, more than 30, but I think maybe even 40 teams when it's all said and done. So you ought to be able to do it in a market that's got one of those buildings or build one of those buildings in an effort to get soccer or play whatever else it is that's going to be out there. But I think they're a 10 to 20,000 seat sport, and I think there's a market for that. And then I think the other thing is they got to work through the things that are cheesy, like the reporter running out on the field to ask a question after the touchdown before the extra point
is just
stupid.
Yeah.
Because the reporter's out of breath, doesn't ask a decent question. The guy doesn't want to answer it. We're not getting any insight. So knock that crap off. That's dumb. I will tell you the one thing I think you totally missed out on, Tim, was me and Lebo and Allie sat here watching XFL on Sunday.
All right.
And we enjoyed debating whether or not to go for one, two, or three on the point afters. I think that does add a layer. I found it interesting, kind of the different debates on how you would do it. And I do like that. I think that's fun. And I don't think it's this year, right? The USFL had instant replay in 85. And when did we get it? Like 10 years later in the NFL?
That's the way the NFL is. They don't move quickly, that's for sure.
No, so maybe 10 years from now.
But I do
they'll adopt.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
They would adopt the different extra points, maybe, if they're gonna. But I do think that that's a fun part of the XFL.
I like the kickoffs, and I think the NFL will get to that even quicker than the one, two, or three. And the reason why I like the kickoffs is, number one, you can actually run a play. You could design a blocking scheme from the catch through the blocks, almost like you can do some counters. You could do some different zone blocking. There are some different things that you can implement, I think, on the kickoffs. It would make the kickoff a little more interesting. I'm doing a symposium at UMKC on Tuesday night talking about CTE and head injuries and how it's affecting high school football, college football, and obviously Pop Warner football. One of the things that they're all concerned about and one of the things everybody always talks about is kickoffs. Now, I think that they've taken a lot of that out now with the distance that they have to kick it, and most of the times it's, touchbacks anyways. But I think it'll be exciting because those guys are basically at 10 yards apart. So you can put together, once he catches the ball, now you can put together some sort of blocking scheme where you can kind of make it exciting again and put the returner kind of back into the game, because I think the NFL has kind of taken the returner out of the game over the last 3 or 4 years.
I would agree with that. I haven't seen them do it yet. I hope they just let this rule play out, because they don't really have that many games, right? 4 games a weekend times 10 weeks, that's 40, plus 3 more playoff games. They're going to have 43 games when it's all said and done, and I don't know that that's enough, to figure out. I mean, that's less than 3 weeks of NFL football,
yeah,
the quantity of games that they're going to play. So I think they need several years taking a look at it to see, can anybody devise a scheme, whether it's, some kind of like the old school, trap, for lack of a term. I know what some of the kickoffs we used to run was like you peel back and you're on the right side blocking the left, and the left side's blocking the right, and you try to get that kind of like a big, great big huge trap block up the middle.
Right.
I could see something like that being used, but I think it just needs time. I think whatever the league's going to be, it's not going to be it on week 3.
No.
And so they've got to be invested in it for a number of years. And then I think where it could serve well is quarterback training. I mean, if nothing else, if you get a couple of guys, if you get a Kurt Warner out of this thing who would have been otherwise not given an opportunity to develop and hone his skills, then the NFL will be that much better.
Yeah, it's a good point. And, it'll be interesting to see how this the attendance keeps going and how the ratings keep going. But to your point, listen, there's not much on this time of the year anyway. So if the game is on, you flip it on, you watch a couple quarters of it, and, you take it for what it is. I watched a little bit of it. The first week I was excited. I purposely sat down. I wanted to watch it. This week I was flipping through. I was like, I'll watch this for a little bit, and kind of lost interest after a while. But that's just me. So the XFL is, if anything, just like you said, it could be a development league for some of these guys, because there are some of these guys that people are going to see in the NFL and say, hey, listen, I'll give you an example. Ben Heaney, who played at KU, he plays for the New York team. And he's been playing pretty well. He had made some big hits, and, they talk about him. In fact, he's one of their kind of poster guys. When they show the team, he's one of the 3 or 4 guys that are in the face of it. Now, Ben's a smaller guy. He reminds me a little bit of Zach Thomas, who played for Miami back in the day, a smaller linebacker. But the kid always can lay the wood. He can hit. And he's showing that right now. So maybe he gets a chance to get back into a camp. He was with the Raiders and got cut. And I think he was out of football for a year, and now he's back in. So it gives a kid like Ben Heaney a chance to get back in the NFL.
I think the thing, there are a lot of guys that you hear and they start talking about, they're like, well, he was in the AAF. And it's like, yeah, of course. I mean, they're guys that are on the fringes of it. But to me, and I just, not to beat a drum that I've beaten a number of times, but I really believe it, if the NFL would throw their weight behind a minor league, and you as a Chiefs fan could be watching guys play in the developmental league. So you know, whoever your practice squad and bottom part of the roster plus other prospects were, if they were out there, then I think you'd have a team to root for. I think one of the reasons why you're like, okay, I'll turn it on, and then you lost interest is you didn't care who won.
Right.
But if you were rooting for the Chiefs minor league team, you would care.
Yeah, you know, it's funny you say that because thinking about a minor league program, how would that work? You know, because listen, Seren, you and I know as well as anybody that there's a lot of kids that go to college that are athletes that go play football and they have to play for 3 years, and those kids really don't want to be in school. They it's obviously not as easy to go into the NFL out of high school. In fact, it's almost impossible to go to the NFL out of high school. You're just not developed like a college kid does after 3 years. And you've seen that, and I've seen it with just my son, is how much bigger and stronger they get. But if you had a minor league, almost like a D league, where if there's a kid, you listen, you either come right out of high school or, you know, maybe it's a 2-year deal out of college where you can go into the D league and let these kids go and play. It'd be interesting to see if the NFL would adapt that and what colleges would think about that. The colleges probably wouldn't be a big fan of it, but, you know, basketball, NCAA basketball has to deal with it all the time.
Yeah, and NCAA basketball may be feeling the pain of it right now with the D-League, or maybe it's just one down year. You know, I'm not saying I think about this too much, but I actually even have the schedule together and how you'd do it for the NFL is I think I would go with a, 7 or 14-game schedule. But I think you could do a 7-game schedule. And you know how I'd do the division, how I would set it up? I would have 4 divisions of 8, and every division would have 1 team from each of the NFL divisions.
Okay.
So in other words, you'd have, like, you would not have the Raiders, Chiefs, and Chargers players would not play against each other until you got to the playoffs. Right? So 4 divisions where you play everybody once, 7 games. So you'd have, like, say, the Chiefs minor league team, you'd have the Titans minor league team, the Patriots minor league team, the Steelers minor league team, the Saints minor league team, the Giants minor league team, the Vikings minor league team, and the Rams minor league team. Right? So I've got 1 from every division. AFC West, AFC South, AFC North, AFC East, right? And then NFC North, South, East, West, right? You do that where, so you've got 4 different ones so that you don't just have Raiders, Chiefs, Chargers butting heads against each other and playing their schemes against each other. You're kind of fanned out against the teams that aren't your division. So you're not, you know, getting an extra chance to just scheme against your divisional opponents. But then you play everybody once. And if you, you know, and then at the end of those 7 games, you have your 4-team playoff and you're done. But that way you get 7 games worth of experience for everybody. And, you know, you don't have to just butt heads against your same divisional opponents.
Yeah, you know what? And it's funny because the NFL really did try a concept of this with the NFL Europe League. And I coached there for a year. And on my offensive line, I had 1 guy from Denver. I had 1 guy from Detroit. And I think I had 1 guy from Baltimore. And, you know, you had to write reports on the guys. And, you know, obviously those guys had to play. And there was probably each team would maybe – you know, send 1 or 2 guys into the league, and then they would kind of spread them out around each team. So probably on the field at one time, not all the guys were sponsored or not all the guys were under the umbrella of an NFL team. But I would say that on the field at one time out of the 11, maybe 6 were. And you always had to have a European guy on, which was really hard to do because, I mean, either you made him a wide receiver or didn't do anything, or you made him, you know, the tight end. You know, the one guy we had on, who was from France, he was the middle linebacker. He was actually fairly good, but, I mean, for the European player. But they tried that. They tried to, you know, to do that. But in Europe now, I don't think the appetite was quite there in Europe when I was doing this. This was with 2006. But with all the talk, and you and I have talked about it many times, because you know there's going to be a team in London, there's going to be a team over in England in the next 10 years. There'll be a team over there. So do you make that minor league team? Do you put that in Europe and keep that appetite wet out there and get people more excited about having some of those minor league teams in there? Or do you keep them and put them in a smaller state? Like, for example, if the Chiefs had a minor league team, you put them in Little Rock, Arkansas. Or you put them in places like that where people can kind of gather around, like a AAA team in a smaller city where people really take a lot of ownership. Now, do you think that people in Kansas City would go and watch the minor league Kansas City Chiefs play in the spring? more than they would in, let's say, Little Rock, Arkansas, or in Springfield, Missouri, or in, you know, I don't know, in Columbia, Missouri. You know, you can do it that way also, but it'd be interesting to see if they would decide to do something over in Europe, over in England, maybe in Germany, where I think the teams are eventually going to go.
I listen, I think a team is going to go over there, and I think it's called the Jaguars. That's where they're going to play two home games over there next year. Yeah. But and we've said that for a long time in this show. But I think the cost of sending everybody over there is a problem. I think it's got to be in Kansas City, you know, or in the United States, mm-hmm. and then I think proximity to the local teams. And I think the problem is, I mean, you mentioned it, coaching guys from different teams. I mean, I think to make it work, you want to be able to, you know, scheme. Right? Have them learn your system.
Yep.
And so I think you need a whole team of guys. I don't know. Listen, I love the idea. They're just never going to do it. But they're not going to do it anytime soon, I should say. But if the XFL, and this is why I think the XFL is doomed when it's all said and done, if they get any traction, then the NFL will do it.
They'll squash it.
Right? As soon as they prove it can work, the NFL will do it. That's what I think. But we'll see. Tim, let's take a break. Let's come back. Let's talk about Eric Bieniemy. And why he should or should not be going after the Colorado job. Reports are that he's not. He's wanting an NFL gig. Right. Instead, should he or shouldn't he want the Colorado job? We'll talk about that next with Tim Grunhard here in the program.
The program with Soren Petro.
I know he means well, but he is quite possibly the foulest man I have ever met.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
All right, the Jazz into the hour answer. Tim Grunhard joining us this hour. Who started at center for the Chiefs in the first game after Grunny retired?
Well, it was supposed to be Casey Wiegman, right?
It was
supposed to be Casey.
But he was hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And is that the one Brian Waters started?
Brian Waters.
There you go.
You know, it might be because you've asked this question half a dozen times.
I used it a different way. I was going to use it with Wiegman because today's Brian Waters' birthday. He's 43. So I probably used it every time it was his birthday. So probably more than a half dozen, more like how long have I been on the show?
Yeah.
So, yes, B-Watt.
I like it, though. It's a good question. You know, it's just oft used.
Why don't you throw in a year later, people have forgotten about it, you know?
Yeah, but then there's some Richard who keeps bringing up the fact that you already used this one makes it, you know,
guilty.
Jed.
It is the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHP. Soren Petro here at Surprise, Arizona. Spring training coverage continues with Tim Grunhard. That's how we like to cover spring training. We just took a break from the baseball. We'll get back into that. We're going to hear from Danny Duffy. He's going to join us in our next hour. We'll talk about maybe some of the roster flexibility. Mike Matheny, some of his comments from earlier today. We'll do that coming up in our next hour. Gary Parrish still to come here in the program. But, Tim, reports are that Eric Bieniemy, that they're, you know, Brett Bielema, first of all, his name was being thrown around. They're saying, well, Colorado might not get its top targets. Yeah, because they don't pay anybody. Mm-hmm. That's number one. You shouldn't have lost the guy you had, but you weren't even going to consider matching what Michigan State was offering. Let me ask you, Eric Bieniemy, should he take this job?
No.
Why?
Absolutely not. Well, first of all, Eric Bieniemy is a great coach, and I think Eric Bieniemy
he'll
have success anywhere he goes, but it'll be a lot harder and it'll take a lot longer to have success at Colorado or in a team like that than it will in the NFL. Because, listen, first of all, we always talk about it. You got to have the Jimmys and Joes. You got to have the talent around you. For your system to work, you got to have guys that can run the system. You have to have guys that can fit in and guys that can perform and win you football games. And not saying that Colorado is lacking talent, but, listen, they never are in the top 50 in recruiting classes. And, you know, in order for you to even be in the top 50 in recruiting classes, you better break the top 25 in rankings, and they haven't been able to do that in a long time either. So you're going to a program that's kind of in a rebuilding stage, and that may take 3 or 4 years to do. And do you want to take 3 or 4 years and go out and recruit 18-year-old, 17-year-old kids and travel all over the country and go into houses and go over to, you got to go to California to recruit from Colorado. You got to go down to Arizona. You got to go down to Texas. You got to hit Colorado, Arizona, obviously. And then, and you know, you, if, do, is that something you want to do? So if you go to the college, there's just a lot more things that you have to worry about and do. And listen, I think Eric Bieniemy is going to be an excellent NFL coach, and I think he's just
why,
kind of, because I, first of all, I think he gets the players, the current players. I think he gets them. I think that he is one of those guys that can relate to him. And I'm not saying he's a player's coach, because I haven't seen that in him. He can relate to him because, number one, these guys respect him because he's a tough guy. He's a smart guy. He puts a lot of time in to his craft, and you know, he has really kind of put his own stamp on even Andy Reid's offense. He's put his own stamp on it, and for him to do that, that's something special. And I think Andy gives these guys a little bit of leeway to put their own stamp on it, and he promotes his coordinators. The other thing is, and the thing that I loved about him is, listen, he got in the face of, you know, Kelce and some of these guys when they started to slack off a little bit, and it shows his toughness and shows his belief that, you know, that you're going to do it my way, you're going to do it the right way, or, you know, or I'm going to let you know about it. So I think he can go into a program. Cleveland's so rough right now. I don't even know if anybody in Cleveland has straightened that out. But he can go into a program that maybe there's a little bit of malcontent or discontent in the program, and I think turn it around and do it a little bit quicker than he can in the college ranks. I think he's earned the opportunity to do it. He's been named over now for 2 or 3 years as a potential coach, and he has not been hired. And I told you guys, I said maybe one more year, maybe this is the year. So I think this year, you know, listen, he won a Super Bowl, did a great job of, you know, of developing that team offensively, and now he's got one more year to kind of do it again and then go find a job, and I think he will.
I'm trying to think of what he could do in 2020 that he hadn't already done.
You know what? Maybe I don't know, and it could, because I think I know what he does. I think I have an idea of how much he's involved in the game plan, how much he's involved in the play calling. But maybe he's not quite as involved as we think he is. Maybe Andy's calling more of the plays. Maybe Andy gives him a little bit more leeway, takes, you know, hands off the reins a little bit, and lets him, you know, be more of a developer of the game plan and be more of a developer of situational football and call plays. Maybe he starts to do that a little bit more, but I don't know, because I don't know how much. Mm-hmm. I don't think any of us know how much he really is doing, but you can always let him do more and he can learn a little bit more. And listen, any year that you are under an Andy Reid, and any year that you are in a winning program and you understand what it takes to win and what you have to demand from those players and what those players need to do in order to have success, is a good thing to put on your resume and a good thing for your coaching abilities.
But that's all already there, right? And
yeah, but he didn't get hired. So, I mean, that's the thing. He didn't get hired. And I'm not sure why he didn't get hired. Maybe they just didn't think he was quite ready to get hired. But I do think,
or maybe he's not a head coaching material.
See, I
that's what I'm getting at.
I think he is. I think he is. I really do. And I told you why I think he is.
Distinction between what we think he is and what the league's perception of him is,
absolutely,
could be very different.
It could be.
So let's examine this, right? Why do we think he's a head coach? I think mostly because the two people who held the position before he did got head coaching jobs. And they've each had some level of success. Mm-hmm. Doug Peterson winning a Super Bowl, Matt Nagy winning a division in his first year. So therefore, whoever comes next in that position must be groomed to have at least that kind of success, or it would seemingly be next in line. But what if he's not? Right? I'm going to tell you what's different about Eric Bieniemy here. And look, I'm all for, I'm the guy, by the way, who, and there are others, I'm not the only one, I don't act like I'm the only one out there, that's not it. There are lots of other people doing their job out at Arrowhead, bringing up the subject of African-American coaches in football. But a lot of the times I'm the first guy to ask the question, right, on Bieniemy, because he doesn't want to answer it. Everyone knows he's not going to answer it. But I ask it anyway, because I think it's important for it to get out there. But I don't want the fact that I ask the question, because I think it's the right question to ask, to be construed as I'm declaring that the man should be an NFL head coach. I don't know. I will tell you openly, I don't know. I know his resume. is as complete as the resume of the two previous guys, or nearly as complete. He didn't play quarterback, which I do think gives you a bit of an additional boost. But he's been an offensive coordinator under Andy Reid for 2 years, been around Andy Reid for seven, and knows the Andy Reid blueprint, which I think is a big part of it. But frankly, if you ask me who rank the head coaching candidates on Andy Reid's staff, he's third.
Behind who?
Third.
You're going to put Kafka in front of him?
Maybe fourth, okay? But third for sure. One, Steve Spagnuolo, he's been a head coach.
No, he's not.
He did a fantastic job this year proving that he can scheme, and he did it without superior talent all over the board. Yep. He had two expensive caliber defensive linemen, and he had one expensive safety, and the rest of it was either rookies or guys that were had on the cheap, okay? And some of them even failed previous draft picks like Tano Passanio, and all he did was end up with the number seven scoring defense in the NFL. So the number one head coaching candidate on the Chiefs coaching staff is Steve Spagnuolo. They may never call because he had a failed stint with the Rams, whether it was his fault or not. It was a failed stint. They didn't get it done. They got fired. And then number two is Dave Tobe, and he's number two because he doesn't have head coaching experience. But there is no reason that Dave Tobe can't have the exact same kind of success that John Harbaugh had. Right, so we focus on Bieniemy and we put the spotlight on Bieniemy because he's black.
Well, no, and right? Also because he's actually the one going out and doing the interviews. I mean, Dave Tobe didn't go out.
Well,
in
yes,
off-season
good point,
interview.
Great point. Yeah, that's a great point, Tim. Yes, he's getting the interviews and the other two aren't. Right. Tobe, we put a spotlight on a couple of years ago when he got the interviews, but unless something's happened we don't know about, he has not gotten the interviews the last couple of years. So that's a great point. Very good point. And the other one is the other aspect of it is because the subject is real and there is an issue. Now, is the issue of head coaches being hired in the NFL, African-American head coaches being hired in the NFL, just that old white guy owners, of which they all are, save what, one? Shad Khan with the Jaguars?
Mm-hmm.
Is the only guy that's not a quote-unquote Caucasian?
I think so.
Male.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So is it because of that, or is it because we don't have enough African-American candidates that are truly qualified? We're interviewing him because there's a rule, and it's a good one, because I think it got Mike Tomlin his job, and Mike Tomlin's been one of the best head coaches in football. And I don't know that he gets that job, gets that chance, certainly may not get that chance with the Steelers without that rule. So the rule's great. The rule is working from the standpoint that it's getting guys interviewed. But are we really getting enough quarterback coaches who are the most likely guys to be offensive coordinators who, frankly, right now are the most likely guys to get the jobs? And I don't think so. I don't think we are. So I think there's more work that needs to be done elsewhere. But just because you become an offensive coordinator doesn't mean you're going to be a great coach.
Yeah.
And the other thing that I'll bring up is that never gets talked about because I think most people with good intentions – want Eric Bieniemy to get the job. They have the intention of we need more African-American coaches, so they are pushing Eric Bieniemy for the job because right now he's the tip of the spear. He's the guy in the hot coordinator spot where coaches have come from, so therefore he should be hired next. But what if he interviews like crap? What if there is some skeleton in his closet that none of us know about, that word is out in the coaching ranks? I'll give you one. Let's just talk about it because it gets talked about off the air, but it never gets talked about on the air. Everyone around the NFL will say, you know, he was kind of a wild child his days as a coach at Colorado. Now, I don't know what that means, right? There's no legal, there's no arrest record. So whatever it was, it's nothing that landed him in jail. But I've heard that from more than one person and not just from white people. Okay, I've had people that are African-American tell me, well, you know, one of the things about his days at Colorado is blank, but nobody writes that, right? Nobody says it. I went down this road, was it last year or 2 years ago, about why isn't Brent Venables getting a job? All right, he makes $2.4 million a year as a Clemson defensive coordinator, has had nothing but success in that role, has had nothing but success in that role there and at Oklahoma and coaching at K-State. Nobody has had a more complete resume to be a head coach of a Power 5 program, short of Division Power 5 head coaching experience or head coaching experience of some kind, which many guys don't. Kirby Smart didn't have it, and he's been very successful at Georgia, right? Brett Venables was Kirby Smart before Kirby Smart was Kirby Smart at Alabama, and he's not gotten a job. And there are all kinds of rumors that are out there as to what the reason is. And I brought it up, and people freaked out. We'll talk about it when we're not on the radio. Everybody will discuss it, but nobody has boo to say when you go on the record. And I personally think that's crap. I think that if Brett Venables is getting blackballed by somebody, they need to be exposed. And if Brett Venables did something wrong, that needs to be exposed. Now, I don't think that's what we've got here with Eric Bieniemy. I think Eric Bieniemy really was never even remotely on the radar screen until he got the OC job with the Chiefs. And after 1 year, I don't think he was ready. After this year, I can tell you I think he might have been ready. Mm-hmm. But I could fully understand somebody interviewing Eric Bieniemy and saying, he's just not ready yet.
Yeah.
And that's why everybody passed on.
And I'm not saying you're wrong, and I'm not saying I don't know. I played against Eric when I was in college, and he was a very, very aggressive guy, and I loved his attitude, but it was really brash. He was a tough attitude. In fact, he challenged our whole team. He came out at the 50-yard line and absolutely blankety-blanked us up and down the field, which was fine. I mean, this he was intense. I kind of liked it. That's the kind of guy that I wanted to block for. But here's the deal that I don't get, and this is why I think that, you know, I think he's ready to be a head coach, and maybe you're right. Maybe he doesn't interview well. I know a lot of guys are very, very smart football coaches that go into interviews and they just don't get jobs because maybe they just can't, get their point across, or they're not as fluid or not as smooth with their presentation. I don't know. I really don't know. But here's the one thing that I do know. Is that Andy Reid, when Andy Reid puts his stamp on you as a guy that he believes can be a NFL head coach, I don't think Andy would just do that willy-nilly. I don't think Andy would just say, okay, because Eric Bieniemy is on my staff and because he's my offensive coordinator, that I think he could be a head coach. I don't think he'd do that. I think he's got a reputation as a guy who promotes coaches under his tutelage, and when he promotes those guys have paid off. I don't think he'd take a chance on Eric Bieniemy if he didn't think that Eric Bieniemy was good enough to be a head coach. I don't think that Andy's that kind of guy. I think that Andy has a lot of respect for the NFL. He has a lot of respect for the ownership in the NFL. I think he has a lot of respect for the coaching position, the head coaching position. And I don't think he'd just say, because I got a guy who's African-American, who's my offensive coordinator, that I'm going to promote him even though he's not ready to coach. So, I mean, I'm going to trust in what Andy Reid thinks. I don't know. We're not in those meetings. But to your point, you might be right. Eric Bieniemy may be unbelievable in the offensive room. He might be unbelievable on the sideline, but he might not be as good during the interview process. There's some kind of tick, or maybe just people are saying, you know, he's 1 year away. But if Andy Reid says he's ready and can be a head coach, then I got to go with it and say that I'm going to trust it when Andy Reid says, because I don't think that he'd put his reputation on the line just to sell somebody.
All right, so last thing, because I know we need a break, and that's this. What's the most famous play in the history of the Super Bowl? What is going to live on in infamy?
Wasp
is going to be it. And in that video, what do we have? Patrick Mahomes says to Eric Bieniemy, do we have time to run Wasp? And what does Eric Bieniemy do? He gets on the headset and asks somebody else, do we have time to run Wasp?
Yeah.
Yeah, and
he doesn't answer it.
He says, "What are we thinking?" And you don't really hear much.
Yeah.
Then he says, "Do we have time to run Wasp?"
Yeah, and so he's looking to somebody else. He's not given the answer.
Yeah.
Now we don't hear the next 15 seconds after that, and maybe he goes, "All right, this is it." We don't hear 5 minutes before it where Bieniemy perhaps says, "Listen, remember, we've got Wasp in our pocket. We know that's going to work in this situation."
And we don't hear
maybe
what's
he's
in
done
his
that.
Headset
we
either.
Don't know. Yeah. Yeah, we don't know. We know what we did see. He seems to be looking to somebody else to answer the question. That's all I'll say.
Yeah, I mean,
I want him to get a head coaching job if he's truly the best candidate to get a head coaching job. I definitely want more African-American coaches in the NFL because I do think it is a problem. All right. But jamming somebody into the spot that may not be ready for it and may never be ready for it will not help the cause.
So listen, I mean, just to play devil's advocate here, listen, I've been on the headsets on sidelines in high school, right. College, NFL, Europe. There's a lot of times when players will come up and say something to an offensive coordinator or say something to a defensive coordinator, and they maybe have calculated something else, and in their mind they're saying, okay, you know, we're going to run this, this, or that. And the quarterback comes in and says, hey, I want to run this. And he's thinking, well, you know, I would say that most of the time they're going to reflect back to their head coach, say, hey, is this something you think we want to do at this point? I don't think that shows weakness. I think that shows that, you know, at least he's saying, listen,
fair.
Is this something that we want to do at this time? Because, all you know, this is a very important moment. So if the head coach, listen, when the tombstone is made for the head coach, the wins and losses go on his tombstone and not on the offensive coordinator's
That's true.
Tombstone.
That's true.
So when an offensive coordinator is going to make a decision, I hate to say life or death decision, but a win or loss decision, you're going to go to the guy that really it's on him, because if they screw it up and all of a sudden he says, well, I let him do it, he didn't ask me, and now all of a sudden Andy Reid's got to answer questions why he couldn't throw the ball down the field for 30 yards on third down and long, and all of a sudden they're thrown out in the flat or blah, 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 who knows, and then who has to answer the question? Andy Reid. So I just think that Eric, I don't think that shows weakness. I just shows just kind of the way that it works on the sideline.
All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back. More with Tim Gernhardt next here in the program.
The program with Soren Petro.
You should be in a little better shape than you're in right now.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
You're in the program on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Grunny is with us, our good friend, our pal.
Surprise, surprise.
That is where I am right now. Tim Gernhardt back in Kansas City. We'll get back into some baseball talk coming up in our next segment. Right now we continue talking football with Tim Gernhardt. Tim, I want to get your thoughts on whether or not Joe Burrow should pull an Eli Manning and refuse to play for the Cincinnati Bengals. Would you, if you were Tom Condon, who was your agent, recommend that to Joe Burrow?
Wow, that's a good question. It seems like a lost cause when you go to Cincinnati.
Carson Palmer has done exactly that.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like a lost cause when you go there. I don't know. That's a tough question. Can you be the guy that goes and turns around Cincinnati and makes them a winner? I don't know. All I know is I actually had a great conversation with Bo Pelini. His son and my son are actually roommates at Notre Dame, and Bo is now the defensive coordinator at LSU. And he said, you know, he obviously didn't coach him. Now, he did kind of recruit him when he was at Nebraska and said, listen, they didn't do a very good job recruiting him, and because he was a guy who wanted to go to Nebraska. That's a long story. But he told me that he watched Joe Burrow's film, and, you know, when they're breaking down, the offense is breaking down the defense breaking down the offense, and they're going through. He said that Joe Burrow is as good as he's seen. He thinks that he's going to be an excellent pro quarterback. So whatever that's worth. So I think the guy has a lot of talent. Can he go to Cincinnati and turn that program around? I mean, listen, is Cincinnati finally or ever going to invest in that team and give that team an opportunity to win? If they're not, and Tommy Condon thinks that they're not, and Joe Burrow thinks they're not, then I have no problem with him saying, screw you, I'm going somewhere else. Cincinnati has to have a little bit of responsibility also in saying, listen, we're going to go out and get some free agents. We're going to take full advantage of our cap space and go out and get some guys to come here to help you out, and if they can promise that he's going to do that, then you go. But if they can't and they keep doing what they've been doing, I got no problem with them saying, hey, I'm not going there. I have no problem with that, because it's got to be a two-way street. You can't just be one way. You can't just be locked in and saying, you have to come here. Well, what are you going to do for me other than give him millions and millions of dollars? I don't know. What do you think? Real quick.
Pass. Pass. Shoot your way out of town? Hell no. Don't go to the Bengals.
Yeah.
It's death. It's death.
Yep.
It's death warmed over for a career.
It
no
is.
Doubt about it. Timmy, you're the best, buddy.
All right, brother.
Appreciate it. We'll talk to you next week.
Okay.
Time for our Deli Fresh end of the hour question. Sponsored by Good Sense. Chosen by KC sandwich lovers for 30 years. Good Sense. Not because it's easy, but because it's better.
All right, Kevin Seitzer, the last Royal to have a 90-walk season. Who was the last to have an 80-walk season? Brought to you by Good Sense.